Today is Wednesday, April 7th, and you're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinua Adofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, President Biden sets another COVID target goal.
They are more virulent, and they are, some are more dangerous, but the vaccines work on all of them.
Also, the EU slammed Turkey's human rights record.
The rule of law and respect of fundamental rights are core values of the European Union.
Plus, progress in US-Iran nuclear talks. These stories and more are next. Every adult in the United States will be eligible within 2 weeks to be vaccinated against the coronavirus. President Joe Biden made that announcement Tuesday, shortly after visiting a pop-up inoculation site in Alexandria, Virginia, from where VOA's White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman reports.
At the Virginia Theological Seminary, President Joe Biden spoke of a race against time, expressing hope that enough Americans get vaccinated to beat back a fourth wave of COVID-19 amid relaxed restrictions and emerging variants of the virus.
They are more virulent, and they are, some are more dangerous, but the vaccines work on all of them.
Having enough vaccine for all American adults eligible within weeks for inoculations is one achievement. Getting those reluctant to have the shot put into their arms is another hurdle, a problem known as vaccine hesitancy that the Biden administration is still trying to overcome. Steve Herman, VOA News, Alexandria, Virginia.
As the U.S. nears reaching its goal of vaccinating 200 million Americans by the end of April, the Biden administration is taking more steps towards helping other nations by appointing a coordinator for its global COVID-19 response. White House correspondent Patsy Weda-Skuwara has the story.
By April 19th, all adults in the U.S. will be eligible to get the vaccine, announced President Joe Biden, 2 weeks earlier than his original May 1st deadline.
We're now administering an average of 3 million shots per day, over 20 million shots a week. On Saturday alone, we reported more than 4 million shots were administered. We're the first country to administer 150 million shots and the first country to fully vaccinate over 62 million people.
Under pressure from other countries to share vaccines, earlier this week, Biden appointed Gail Smith as coordinator for the administration's global COVID-19 response. Smith is a global health expert who has advocated for shipping surplus vaccines abroad.
American leadership is desperately needed, and I'm extremely confident we can rise to the occasion.
While many lower and middle-income countries have begun inoculating with Chinese vaccines and doses coming from COVAX, the UN's global vaccine sharing mechanism, experts say there is still a lot the U.S. can do beyond providing surplus doses.
It can help grow manufacturing capacity as a goal. It can bring order and transparency to a vaccine marketplace around the world that is untransparent, chaotic, and unaccountable at the moment.
On Tuesday, Biden also visited a vaccination site at a chapel in Virginia. His administration has launched a coalition of religious and community leaders to help persuade Americans reluctant to get vaccinated, around 20% according to polls. Americans are also increasingly defying health protocols, including many who celebrated a college basketball victory earlier this week.
We have over 60,000 new cases occurring every day, and younger adults now are the vectors. They are spreading this virus. They're going to ball games. They're going to restaurants and bars.
According to the White House, about 40% of adults in the U.S. have received at least one dose, and almost 20% of the total population is fully vaccinated. Patsy Weda-Skuwara, VOA News.
The United States on Tuesday described indirect talks with Iran in Vienna as a constructive and potentially useful step towards both sides resuming compliance with the 2015 nuclear deal that Washington abandoned 3 years ago. State Department spokesman Ned Price.
The reason we are in Vienna is to discuss what those steps might look like to return to mutual compliance. Calls for the United States to take unilateral gestures or conciliatory overtures that are unmatched by the Iranians. I don't think that is constructive. We don't think that is constructive. And so we're focused, and the team is focused in Vienna, on what would be constructive, on what would be reasonable to achieve that desired end state of mutual compliance for compliance.
That's State Department spokesman Ned Price. Iran and major powers will continue to discuss ways to revive the 2015 nuclear deal that former U.S. President Donald Trump abandoned. In 2018, Iran's chief nuclear negotiator, Abbas Araghchi, told state television on Tuesday.
I think it was constructive and in the right track. It's too soon to say that it has been successful. That would be known after the work of the working groups. But, of course, we are hopeful. If we were not hopeful, we would have not been here. We would move based on our own policies, on our own instructions. We only go back to full compliance when the U.S. has lifted all sanctions imposed or reimposed or relabeled after January 2017 and has verified by the Islamic Republic of Iran. Then we would go for full compliance.
That's Iran's chief negotiator, Abbas Araghchi. Prosecutors continued to make their case Tuesday in the trial of Derek Chauvin, the former Minneapolis police officer charged in the death of George Floyd, now in its second week. VOA's Esha Sarai has more.
Employees of the Minneapolis Police Department on Tuesday echoed statements by their chief a day earlier that Derek Chauvin's neck restraint of George Floyd, which he sustained for over 9 minutes, was not consistent with the department's training.
And so if there was, say, for example, the subject was under control and handcuffed, would this be authorized?
I would say no.
Under cross-examination by Chauvin's attorney, Mercel testified that officers are trained in some situations to use their knee across the suspect's back or shoulder and employ their body weight to maintain control. But he specified that
we tell officers to stay away from the neck when possible.
Officers detailed the training that Chauvin received during his time on the force, including courses on de-escalation and basic first aid. Also on the stand Tuesday was a use of force expert who deemed that Chauvin's actions against Floyd were excessive.
What is your opinion as to the degree of force used by the defendant on Mr. Floyd on the date in question?
My opinion was that the force was excessive.
Medical professionals who testified earlier said Floyd had likely died due to a lack of oxygen. Defense attorneys say Floyd died of unrelated medical issues and drug use. The trial is expected to last several weeks. Isha Sarai, VOA News, Washington.
Egypt's foreign ministry has accused Ethiopia of, quote, a lack of political will, unquote, after talks aimed at breaking a deadlock over the Grand Renaissance Ethiopia Dam made no progress. Ms. Zanin Moshiri of Reuters has more.
Talks with Ethiopia aimed at breaking the deadlock over a giant hydropower dam have made no progress, Sudan and Egypt said on Tuesday. Delegations from the three countries met in Democratic Republic of Congo to discuss the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam. Ethiopia says the project is key to its economic development, but Egypt fears the dam will imperil its supplies of Nile water. And Sudan has concerns about safety and water flows through its own dams and water stations. Egypt also warned that the Kinshasa meetings may be the last chance to restart negotiations before Ethiopia begins filling the dam for the second consecutive year. Insistence on such unilateral moves, Sudan's foreign minister Mariam al-Sadiq al-Mahdi said on Tuesday, represents a violation of international law. After the meeting, Ethiopia's foreign ministry said the second year filling of the dam reservoir would take place as scheduled. Egypt and Sudan said a proposal to include the European Union, United States and United Nations as mediators to the dispute, in addition to the African Union, was rejected by Ethiopia. So too, suggestions to restart negotiations. That prompted Egypt's foreign ministry to to accuse Ethiopia of, quote, a lack of political will to negotiate in good faith.
That's Nazanin Moshiri of Reuters. The United Nations report more than 11,000 people have fled the coastal town of Palma in northern Mozambique's Cabo Delgado province since jihadist insurgents attacked the town nearly 2 weeks ago. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Civilians arriving in Pemba, the capital of Mozambique's Cabo Delgado, are telling aid workers that thousands of people are trapped inside Palma and the surrounding area. They also report that people fleeing Mozambique have been refused entry into nearby Tanzania. UN Refugee Agency spokesman Baba Baluch says it is very worrisome that people fleeing for their lives are being prevented from seeking asylum.
More than 1,000 tried to cross into Tanzania, tried to cross the border from Mozambique into Tanzania, and they were turned back. So at this stage, we don't know how this happened, who did this, but we are trying to seek clarification from the authorities on the other side inside Tanzania.
The UNHCR is appealing to Mozambique's neighbors to allow entry to people escaping violence and seeking protection. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The EU drug regulator says it has found a, quote, possible link, unquote, between the AstraZeneca coronavirus vaccine and a rare clotting disorder, but said that the benefits of the shot still outweigh risks. In a statement released Wednesday, the European Medicines Agency placed no new restrictions on using the vaccine in people 18 and over. This is the Voice of America. The death toll from mudslides in eastern Indonesia has risen to 126, with scores still missing as rains continue to pound the region and hamper the search. The village of Lamanila on Andonara Island suffered the highest losses, with 67 bodies recovered so far and 6 people missing. An Iranian cargo ship believed to be the base for the paramilitary Revolutionary Guard has been attacked. That's according to an acknowledgement Wednesday by Iran's foreign ministry. The ship has anchored for years in the Red Sea of Yemen. Taiwan's foreign minister says the island will defend itself to the very last day if attacked by China. Joseph Wu says China's attempt at conciliation while engaging in military intimidation are sending mixed signals to the island's residents. China claims Taiwan as its own territory to be won over peacefully or by force. The statement comes as Beijing's Navy has been holding exercises off the east and the west coast of Taiwan. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Tanzania's president, Samia Suluhu Hassan, has announced a scientific committee to research COVID-19 in an apparent departure from the pandemic skeptic policies of her predecessor, John Magufuli. Angela Ukomadu of Reuters reports.
Tanzania's new president, Samia Suluhu Hassan, has signaled a departure from the coronavirus skeptic policies of her predecessor. Under John Magufuli, who died last month, Tanzanians were encouraged to shun mask wearing and vaccines were denounced as a Western conspiracy. The East African country stopped reporting coronavirus data last May. But speaking on Tuesday, Hassan announced a new body to carry out scientific research.
I intend to form a committee of experts to have an in-depth look at the issue of COVID-19 and look at the remedies that we're being told will help us, expertly and in-depth, and then they can advise the government. We cannot keep silent on it, accept it, or deny it without expert research findings.
Though she did not announce any other COVID-19 related changes, Hassan said it was time to take a stand. In another change, she said that media banned under Magufuli's government should be allowed to operate. Hassan was Magufuli's deputy for 6 years, up until his death last month, which was attributed to heart disease. At times, she had embraced his unorthodox and increasingly authoritarian style, but her apparent change of course suggests Tanzania could be heading in a different direction.
That's Angela Okomado of Reuters. New Zealand's Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern has said a quarantine-free travel bubble with trans-Tasman neighbour Australia will start on April 18th. It will allow unrestricted movement between two countries, which have managed to contain the virus through strict lockdowns and international border closures. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
New Zealanders have been allowed into most parts of Australia since October, but travel the other way was banned. New Zealanders who did make the journey across the Tasman Sea also faced a mandatory two-week stay in hotel quarantine on their return. Those arrangements will soon change. New Zealand authorities say that just before midnight local time on April 18, a so-called travel bubble, allowing unrestricted movement, will start between the two countries. Authorities believe the risk of transmission of COVID-19 from Australia to New Zealand is low. At a press conference in Wellington, New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said the travel plan was the only one of its type anywhere.
I can confirm that quarantine-free travel between New Zealand and Australia will commence in just under 2 weeks' time. This is an important step forward in our COVID response and represents an arrangement I do not believe we have seen in any other part of the world. That is, safely opening up international travel to another country while continuing to pursue a strategy of elimination and a commitment to keeping the virus out.
However, travel between Australia and New Zealand could be disrupted should future outbreaks of COVID-19 infections be detected. Officials have said that flights would be suspended from any Australian state or territory if authorities there ordered a local lockdown. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
They promised to return several Benin bronzes from three Western institutions to the former Kingdom of Benin in Nigeria was celebrated by many, but returning all the artifacts looted by British troops 125 years ago will continue to be a challenge. Matthew van der Wolf reports from London.
In recent weeks, a university in Scotland and museums in Germany and Britain pledged to repatriate the Benin bronzes they own. The restitution is hugely symbolic to Timothy Awoyemi, a British-born Nigerian who helped repatriate two Benin bronzes in 2014 from a private collector whose grandfather had been part of the 19th century looting. Awoyemi says he was elated when he heard about the latest returns.
They stole it, so it makes me happy because the stolen artifacts are going to be returned back to where they rightly belong.
British soldiers looted the Kingdom of Benin in what is currently Edo State in Nigeria during a punitive military expedition in 1897. The high-valued plaques, masks and sculptures functioned as an historical archive to the Benin Royal Palace. The sculptures made of brass, bronze and ivory are now owned and displayed across Western museums and institutions. Oxford professor Dan Hicks is the curator of the Pitt River Museum, which holds 145 Benin objects. He authored a book about the bronzes and says the displays of stolen art in Western museums continues to hurt people in the present. Hicks says the argument that Western museums would be emptied out or shut down is unlikely, as restitution needs a case-by-case approach. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, London.
The European Union's top two officials have strongly criticized Turkey's human rights record after meeting with Turkish president in Ankara. But the EU leaders also said the two sides will continue to work together. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
European Council President Charles Michel and EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen met with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan for talks on a reset in relations. After meeting Erdogan in Ankara, Michel spoke to reporters about the EU's deep concern over human rights in Turkey.
The rule of law and respect of fundamental rights are core values of the European Union. And we shared with President Erdogan our deep worries on the latest developments in Turkey in this respect, in particular on the freedom of speech and the targeting of political parties and media.
State prosecutors last month opened a closure case against Turkey's second-largest opposition party, while Ankara withdrew in April from the Istanbul Convention, a European treaty that legally protects women. Emma Sinclair Webb of the New York-based Human Rights Watch has been calling for a tougher stance by the EU.
The EU has to start believing that in its own capacity to speak out on what's going on and to look in, to look at the crisis and to actually condemn what's going on in much stronger terms.
But Michelle and von der Leyen did welcome Turkey's talks with EU member Greece to resolve territorial disputes over the Mediterranean and Aegean seas, which are believed to have vast energy reserves. The EU officials said talks with Turkey would start on modernising a customs union agreement, a key Ankara demand. Sinan Ulgen of the Istanbul-based İDAM Research Institute says the customs union talks will give the EU new leverage, which is important as Turkey's EU membership bid is all but dead.
The accession track has stalled, has remained dormant and dysfunctional over the past few years. And the EU now has very little leverage over Turkey, given that there are very few avenues of, you know, positive engagement.
The EU officials also said they expect Turkey to fully honour its commitment to a migration deal, including accepting migrants and refugees back from Greece. Ankara is pressing for more EU funds to help accommodate nearly 4 million Syrian refugees, a demand that von der Leyen said the European Union was ready to consider. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
A recent report published by the National Academy of Sciences paints a grim picture of declining diversity in ocean life. The study spanned decades, and as VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports, researchers link a drop in species to a rise in ocean temperature.
Research published Monday shows a strong correlation between rising sea surface temperatures and a roughly 50% drop worldwide in the total number of open water species in just 40 years.
In geological history, this is a blimp, so it's just a wink of an eye. To see such rapid changes occurring so rapidly is something that's astonishing, I would say.
Researcher and ecologist Sebastian First says coral reefs have begun moving north and south toward the poles, a sign they're adapting to warmer waters. But he questions if the shift can happen fast enough to adjust to the changing climate. The species that can easily move have largely done so, says researcher Chaya Chaudhary.
We found that all the marine species have moved away from the equator, and they are accumulating in the subtropics, and that's where we have higher peak in the species diversity.
Conservation scientist Stuart Pym says the study by the National Academy of Sciences shows broad trends that demand attention.
What we're doing to the planet is causing an enormous amount of disruption in all sorts of ways. And I think we have to get a handle on that.
Pym says scientists need more data and details to study growing concerns about the food chain. Experts say biodiversity is an essential component to nutritional food. The World Wildlife Fund says approximately 3 billion people worldwide rely on proteins fished, farmed, or caught in the water. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.
Join me with a panel of VOA journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including the ongoing trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, who is charged in the death of George Floyd. The world reacts unanimously to police brutality in America. Don't miss Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.